Blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi, Saranam, Gacchami, Dutiyambi, Tatiyambi, Saha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharma, Saranam, Gacchami, Dutiyambi, Tatiyambi, Saha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyambi Tatiyambi Saha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, Bhagavini Pratipada, the venerable truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient and nitya. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassion and comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves its path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to be so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, and in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, and in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi svaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other. As the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. Thank you. We are here to suffering. If anything, suffering is more important than anything. We will end suffering. If anything, suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end the suffering.
Shall we look at this morning?
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, I wanted to report back about a couple weeks ago I spoke in a group about realizing one day I was I hadn't slept and I was feeling pretty bad during the day, and then I realized, oh my gosh, as long as this is fodder for suffering,
It's got a lot of ammunition,
and I just saw it so clearly. And when I saw that, it was like, wow, the energy just changed completely.
Just in seeing it,
you know, I just like suddenly all my energy came back, and I was like, wow. and I had made it, and then I just said, well, you know, okay, so. So I was looking at it and thought, well, you know, okay, so when I wake up again, it's going to be an occasion for having a party or something that's fun, you know, not
something that sends a message to the system that, yeah, I'm going to really suffer.
Yeah.
That's a great way to suffer.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, you just sent in something really good on books.
Yeah.
You know, you got me. So, so interestingly enough, that night, after I had that insight, I went to bed and I slept. I slept the best sleep I've slept in months.
Wow.
I just laid down to sleep and woke up the next morning.
Okay, boys.
Okay. So then the next night, I woke up. And then it was like, oh my God. Here in... you know how it's so easy in the light of day.
Exactly.
Oh yeah, when I wake up, I'm gonna have all
world. Bam's gonna show up.
And I'm just gonna get up
my dancing shoes on.
Right. This is gonna be fun. And so it's like this sickening dread, like, oh my God, okay, now you gotta put
on it on fun.
Right. Now we gotta have fun because you know, you said so.
Oh gosh, you said so.
So there was this moment, and then it was like, no, you know, I really do want to try a different behavior with this.
Yeah.
And I think I had a tea party.
Uh-huh.
You know, I just I got up and made tea, and you know, just gave it my best shot to not lay there and you know.
Yeah. And I love that attitude of mind of try something else.
Yeah.
Right? Because I would project that first, you know, oh God, the thumping. There's this standard now that's got to set. You said you would. Right? There's the voice coming in to turn your amazing, fabulous, fun insight into a standard. And then the idea to move there was, let's just do something different and see what happens.
Yeah.
No standard. Just play with it. Just do something different.
Yeah. Because I knew what the other way. I know what the other.
Yeah.
Where the other way is.
Yeah.
So we did that. Did that one for a long time. So what else is possible?
And
that was kind of fun and exciting too. Mm-hmm. To just look at, what are the other opportunities here I'm not picking up on? And so I had my, I had a tea party, and I don't remember whatever, but I eventually, I think I did fall back to sleep a little bit, but not a lot of sleep. Mm-hmm. And I just, I just stayed with it to just practice with that other option of not going to down,
Not going down that road.
And then, I just want to report that since, and then, I know that, but it's interesting that since that night I have not woken up. Mm-hmm. I've slept every night since then. It's just pretty interesting.
It does feel like that process of taking away the ammunition, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like a piece of what you might be pointing at is, it's not that done, good, that's behind me, which may be the next piece that tries to set us up, and that's fine, because then that will be our opportunity to deepen the workshop. We'll just go to the next level of working with it.
And I'm just, I there was just some information gained in that whole process that maybe things are not always as they appear, and it's that physical stuff that's just so really, 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 really real, and just so really real, I just often go to that place, that's nice for you, but, you don't have this blah, blah, blah to deal with, and to just real, and it was just it's just a big gift to see, at least in this, at this one experience.
And I feel like there's at least a couple of really helpful principles that we can take away from that. Right? One is, if I'm willing to suffer with this in the way that I'm being set up to suffer, then there's a lot of ability, there's a lot of incentive for the voices to stay on that program. So there's that. And then the other piece of, kind of from that insight of the curiosity of, what if I just tried something different? And what I hear in that is not from a standard of, and I'm going to feel this certain way if I do. Or this certain life experience, in this case, I'm not going to be woken up in the middle of the night. Or, I'll feel good the next day. Right?
It's just like, if I never slept again, I don't want to be suffering. I want to find a way to enjoy it.
And then I could be like Thomas Edison and his people.
Exactly.
Right? If I never slept again, then I have 10,000 opportunities to find out what doesn't work. Or maybe the first night I find out what does work.
Exactly. And for whatever reason, this is what's in front of me now, and I'm going to practice with acceptance and still having an enjoyable life experience, no matter what's coming down.
That no standards part seems so huge.
It seems really huge. Really huge. Yeah. Anyway, there's something else, but I'll hold on to it and I'll come around if there's more.
Okay.
That was just the perfect conversation. So this morning, mind is just all over the place. Just jumping around. And the response to it has been up until that conversation. this is wrong, and I need to fix this, and I need to stop, and whatever, you know, that whole conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And at least the first part of that conversation just completely shifted that.
Uh-huh. Just hearing that conversation shifted your relationship with that.
Yeah. It's not quote unquote me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I was seeing that too as you were describing. That's so interesting, isn't it? At what point, so there's all the stuff that the mind is doing. It's this, that, this, that, this, that, this, that, this, that, this, that. And we're seeing it, and we realize that we're seeing it. You know, awareness of registering this, that. At some point, it clicks in as me. And the place that you're describing is, I don't, you know, that's wrong, that shouldn't be happening. And instead of seeing that as one more this, that, this, that, this, that's me seeing this, that, this, that, this. But it sounds like in what you're describing, if you realize, wait, that's just another one of the things that the mind is doing, it's not me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's suffering. It's ego.
Yep.
You know, if there's resistance and distress and resignation and all of those things, it's just conditioned mind.
Yeah.
Driven around doing what it does.
Doing what it does. Yep.
And there's, I guess, the only intelligent, as it says in their seven worldview, the all intelligent attitude of mind bring to it is fascination.
Yeah.
You know, it's not quite as fascinating as it used to be. Yeah. It's just a big soul.
Yeah. Really. Really, because it really is what Sequoia was talking about in that first conversation, really is applicable there. If it can, if that's how it can get me to suffer, by jumping around, and then, okay, great, now let's put in the, and that's wrong, you shouldn't be that way. You know, we're going to the cherry on top. There, we've got the whole suffering program done. If I suffer over that every time, then it's got a lot of incentive to keep doing that.
Yes, exactly. So second half of the conversation, I do wake up very often. I either can't get to sleep at all, or I'll sleep maybe a couple of hours and wake up and I'll wait for a long time. I have yet to find the willingness to, but what I often do is turn the light and read, which I notice doesn't really help. It doesn't help do anything but pass the time. And I try listening to recordings. Not working, but maybe I should get better. Another try or a more concerted effort. But I've yet find the willingness to get up and metaphorically make, I don't like tea, but to get up and make tea. But I think after this conversation, I don't think there's going to be any choice but to get up and metaphorically, maybe.
Yeah. Well, and again,
just see.
Exactly. That curiosity that you were pointing out earlier, that, you know, just, okay, what if? And with all of it, to pay really close attention, you know? I mean, that's one of those things, at least for me, I always wish, should have been another way to say that. Because we hear it so often that it can sort of slide right past. But I project what's so fundamental about that teaching is that, at least for me, when I'm in those situations, you know, I'm awake in the middle of the night where I don't feel well, or, you know, the physical thing, you know, the physical stuff is so, as Sequoia was pointing out, so real. that there's such a pull to in some way go unconscious and just get through it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And if we can pay attention, that's what I've really been noticing for myself, is I was having a little workshop on it yesterday. Not necessarily make myself be any certain way or try to have even any certain relationship with it, but just pay really close attention as it's happening. Because then what seems like is available to us is, if I'm bringing something to it, if there's a behavior that I'm quote choosing through it over and over and over again that's creating suffering that I actually don't want to do, if I'm paying attention over time, my experience is that will just get worn out. Mm-hmm. We just won't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
But I think one of the coups, that's
excellent.
Yeah. One of the coups I noticed for me that the voices do is, if it can get me to circumvent that, like basically keep over and over and over saying, this is the wrong thing, I need to do the right thing. And whether I do the right thing or I don't do the right thing, if I stay in that conversation, I'm never allowed to get through it to the place where I actually have worn out the suffering.
Yeah. That conversation is just another level of it.
Keeping it in place. I shouldn't, but I do. I shouldn't, but I do. I shouldn't, but I do. I shouldn't, but I do.
Do the stuff until it's clear that doing is kind of misses the point.
Yeah, well, I just, when you said that, I just thought of the William Penn, carry the sword, and so you can't stand off, carry the sword. But it requires us to really be paying attention as we're carrying that sword. Right? So that, I'm afraid to butcher the story, but it does sound bizarre. People don't know the story, but basically, I think William Penn, you carry a sword if you're whatever he was, and he became a Quaker, and so that those two things didn't really match up, and so he was asking one of his mentors for guidance around that, and basically it was carry the sword until you can't stand not to carry it. And so that place where we're actually allowed to have the experience. Because here's what I project onto that. So there I am, I'm William Penn, and I say in a conversation, I never actually have the experience of carrying the sword. I only have the conversation about it. And it's the experience of it that will change me. Not because I should, or I have to, or I whatever, but because the actual experience of it will change me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. So that process with the William Penn thing was how I let go of meat and Little Debbie oatmeal cakes.
Meat and Little Debbie oatmeal cakes.
When I would allow myself to really have the experience of eating those things.
That's radical.
It was not that great.
Wow. I project that takes a lot to do that.
It really does. It really does. And I can go into the detail of what wasn't so great about it, but you get the point.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, but I would project, especially the meat, where you're supposed to be a vegetarian.
Because all this was post-precepts.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Because, and it was so much, having to fight with that. Well, I'm doing this because I want to be a good Buddhist, or I want to be a good person, or, whatever. I love animals. I want to be kind to animals, blah, 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 blah. But that, in a way, that was circumventing letting it hurt my heart to eat meat.
Wow, God, that, and it, you really have to prove that to yourself.
Yeah.
That could sound crazy.
Yeah.
Because what it sounds the reverse of what it is. Well, you just want to eat the meat, so yeah. You're just
Yeah. And plus, I also enjoyed when I would be driving around or walking, you know, looking at cows with a really clear conscience and a lot of love.
Mm.
And that was coupled it with the experience of letting myself eat the beef or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So it was both, you know. I mean, it was all part and parcel of having the full experience of it.
So wait, let me see if I'm following that. So you're saying as this experiment is going on and you're eating the meat and really paying attention, you're also, when you're seeing cows, really allowing yourself to experience the love for them and the, well,
and yeah, it's the whole being with the person at the bottom of the well.
Wow.
If it hurts my heart, be with hurting heart.
Wow.
You know, be with that. Then from that place, make a different choice if you want to. But there's no room for shoulds in that, you know.
That really is the base of the conscious compassionate action, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Really that process. I mean, especially that piece of allowing myself to really love the cows.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, we're not supposed to be allowed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Not if we're boy eating meat,
right.
Literally or metaphorically.
You're being a hypocrite.
You have to be the right person first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Which is meant to keep us never allowing the heart to open, getting to make the choice we want to make. I mean, all those things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and my little experience or contribution to the conversation around sleep is I'm having, I too wake up in the middle of the night for, you know, hours sometimes.
Mm.
And the thing that I noticed, because I was looking, why is my experience different than what I'm hearing? And I see that there's a belief that I've held since, I don't know, I read something when I was young about how these brilliant people only needed 3 or 4 hours sleep.
Yeah.
So somehow I always took that to mean, oh good, maybe I'm on the right track.
I'm midnight, I'm ready to go.
But what I find, I don't think I'm quite on that brilliant person path yet, but what I do find is a tremendous amount of clarity about, maybe this is that just paying attention part that you were talking about. I don't know. I haven't seen it as that at the time, but what I do find is that around, you know, right before I'm about to go to bed, recording and listening just seems the last thing I want to do.
Mm.
But boy, 3 or 4 hours later, it is, I'm there. And so I just kind of take it like, well, there's just not the clarity at 9:30, but there will be at 4, you know, or 3.
Uh-huh.
It'll be there, and I'll get up and I'll do it.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, it's exactly what happened.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when I listen back to those recordings, so you always have to listen back in the light of day and think, did I make any sense with them?
Right.
And they do tend to be really kind of
clear and
yeah.
Like seeing things.
Mm-hmm.
And,
uh-huh. A lot of clarity.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing is I have noticed the, oh my God, it's 3, and I've got to get up at 3 hours, and I'm not, and then you sort of that calculating of how I'm going to feel then at 10 in the morning, you know, and boy, is that worthless, and to see that, and I love my mother for this line that she used with us all through our growing up, whenever she didn't want to engage. You know, like when I was 13 and said, are you going to buy me a car when I'm 16? You know, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
She would always say, well, we'll see.
Uh-huh.
And so the conversation would kick in. Oh, I'm going to be so tired. I've got to get up. Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
I employ that line so much.
Wow. That is so huge.
It cuts through.
What are you going to say?
Exactly. It's not arguing with it. It's
nope.
Not,
nope.
You know, not, you know, ignoring it or anything. It's
yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. Boy, and that really, I mean, it basically brings the attention back to here, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Or at least invites the attention to be back here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does sort of just acknowledge that we're here.
Yeah.
And we don't need to worry about there.
No. And that certainly, at 3 in the morning, when I'm awake, having a conversation about how worried I am about going back to sleep and what that's going to mean later, here's what we can know. That's not going to help.
Yeah. Like, and you really don't know what the energy is going to be like the next day.
Really don't.
Because, you know, because then this is something else I've noticed about that whole sleep thing is there's an assumption that underlies that, that I see anyway, that there is a... That energy is somehow compartmentalized. Mm-hmm. And it's, if I won't have energy here in this compartment if I don't do this in this compartment of the 24-hour period of time or whatever. Mm-hmm. As if energy knows any boundaries whatsoever and it's not always all completely 100% available all the time.
Yeah, which was kind of illustrated in Sequoia's story, right? And then, God, I didn't sleep well, and then really I'm having a hard day, and I'm lagging, and I have this insight, and it's like, whoosh!
Exactly, it's right there. Yes, exactly so. Yeah. And we can feel it in that, we can feel it sometimes, and sometimes we don't, maybe, but that doesn't mean it's not there.
Yeah. Well, and that's another sort of interesting thing about being willing not to indulge that conversation at 3 in the morning, because that's an energy siphon.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's all it is.
That's all it is.
And that's why picking up the recorder has been to record. I mean, sometimes I listen to, here's my favorite, just a little tip. I had a bunch of Rumi poems from the Rumi retreat years ago, and I just have a whole one Rumi poem after another, And I always kind of like to see how far I can get into it before I fall asleep, before I know, the last one I remember hearing was that I almost always, that will almost always do the trick or whatever, but if I'm trying to get back to sleep.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, it's just a game in a way. Yeah. It's just a big game.
Yeah. And kind of as people have been pointing out, it's a big experiment. And I think what you're throwing into it is with that really stripping the worry out of it.
Yeah.
Right? Stripping any kind of concern out of it. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. And another piece that I project onto that is, and if we do get to a place that's really hard at a certain point in the day, then we'll look to see what makes sense then.
Well, that's exactly, yes, thank you. That's the other incredibly important piece of it, because there's an assumption then that I wouldn't be able to take care of this person who's feeling a little sluggish or cranky or down or sleepy or whatever. Yeah. Like, what's up with that?
There are kinds of tools at my fingertips for that.
Yeah, I can even sit down and rest. Or whatever.
If I needed to do something that, say, in this case for us, wasn't on the schedule, I can seek guidance. There's always something.
There's always a path to kindness.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God, we do not live in a concentration camp where that's not a possibility.
Yeah.
We really have a path to kindness. And I can imagine, we have stories of even people in concentration camps found the path to kindness. Yeah. So there's no excuse for that kind of slave driving.
Yeah.
There's no basis in reality, I should say, for that kind of slave driving mentality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, it's basically what you're doing is how would you phrase it? You're freeing yourself from, we've been talking about this in the morning show, that control that the voices have over us. So basically, at 3 in the morning, the way they're controlling us is through fear, and the assumption being that later at 10 in the morning, when I'm really, down, it's controlling me, and it's telling me, you can't ask for this, you won't be able to, but I'm basically saying, no, life is in charge of this life, and we're going to be completely fine because life takes extraordinary care of us always.
And that's all it encompasses in. We'll see.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll see.
Yeah,
thank
you. That's great. I was projecting onto that level of exploration, or finding out what's true for us.
Yeah.
And our own experience is a lack of fear.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I think you said it that, we don't have to worry because we'll see.
We'll see.
And I was looking at that, the ability to actually be in that experience of we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
You have to practice it. So if somebody came up to you and just said, well, when you get in that place, just say, we'll see, and you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I actually have to go and have my own experience of that. Mm-hmm. That's a helpful tip, but I have to build on that.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's fine, or it's ego, or all those things. to me, it's the practice of actually doing that, mm-hmm. calling it out as ego, mm-hmm. using the words, mm-hmm. we'll see, mm-hmm. and having the experience builds a place of not fear or less fear, which uh-huh. expands the field that I can now explore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it feels like for you, those might just be words, and that you feel like you really need to practice that. Mm-hmm. You really need to practice expanding into that place.
Mm-hmm. And that place that you were in another conversation talking about, how it can kind of fold in everything that's going on and say, yeah, but you're the wrong person. That's the cherry on top. It just, we talk about at the end of a retreat, I'll try to sabotage all the insights mm-hmm. by picking on one thing mm-hmm. and trying to coat the whole. And I've been talking about this practice of, you know, whatever happened, the return to the mentor, who's always like, well, you nailed it. And the reflection in the last group I was in was, that's a way to do what it's doing to us, that I'm folding everything in that happened, mm-hmm. and the place is, you nailed it, which is a place of love. I love you, and mm-hmm. it's perfect, and you're doing great, and there's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
And I noticed doing that regularly. So back to my first point, seems to be giving me a lot more room to explore uh-huh. without the conversation, without self-hate.
Uh-huh.
Because it just completely ends things. Mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, it highlights how much conversation is going on.
Uh-huh.
And it ends the conversation.
Again, because where is it going
to
go?
It has nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. Like in meditation, I've been really aware, more aware in meditation, how there's this subtle message of, you know, it always does these things like, wait, I mean, your meditation posture is really good. And then there's a space. But
Pause.
Yeah, but you know, and it's this thing around, you don't really go for it. You're just kind of relaxing, and you're counting, but you're not really trying that hard.
Yeah.
You know, which feels true when you're listening to the voice, because, well, I am, did kind of allow myself, it seemed like I allowed myself to go off,
yeah.
rather than, because yeah. then it'll compare. Mm-hmm. Well, there are those times where you were really paying, you were pretending the sword master was there with the sword, and you could count sets of 10,
mm-hmm.
but you're not doing that now, mm-hmm. so well, we know what that means about you, and mm-hmm. yeah, that kind of thing.
I mean, this is so funny, because we can all relate to it, and it's like, not realizing, oh my God, that is a complete conversation.
I know, exactly.
It just feels like me and true. And
exactly. So anyway.
I'm helpful. And
yeah. So I think the practicing of essentially the evaluation by the mentor, you nailed it, is a way to exit the conversation and turn to life. Mm-hmm. And now it's starting just to occur. Yeah. So anyway, that was going on in meditation, which I didn't realize. It's just me, mm-hmm. and it's true. And I'm really going to count. Well, no, I don't really care. I'm just, you know. And then the mentor's like, you're sitting in meditation.
Mm-hmm.
You're nailing it.
Mm-hmm.
You're a person, you're a human being in meditation, and you haven't left. You're here on the cushion. You haven't gone anywhere.
Every day.
Yeah. Right. But right now, all this stuff about I'm essentially the wrong person.
Mm-hmm.
But you're here and sitting in a hall of meditation with other. I mean, that was just astounding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the miracle of that, the how ridiculous it made any mm-hmm. conversation about the meditation.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the miracle of a human being sitting down on a cushion facing a wall.
Yeah.
You're sitting, you didn't run out of the room. First of all, you made the commitment to be here,
mm-hmm.
and you stayed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that makes anything else irrelevant,
mm-hmm.
it seems like.
Yeah.
And that process is becoming true about a lot of things that it uh-huh. likes to talk about.
Uh-huh. That nailed it orientation that you're practicing is A, highlighting that the conversation is going on. So places where the conversation yeah. may have been sort of a little bit underground, or, you know, I would use that, and it just becomes a wallpaper. It's
yeah.
bringing it up visible again, and it started to just spontaneously happen,
mm-hmm.
where the conversation is happening, whether it's meditation or other places, and that mentoring presence is coming in to point out, you nailed it, you're nailing it, it's happening right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I think I talked about this a couple of times before on this, but it's a difference in miraculous well-being life and one of suffering.
Yeah.
Because the thing that's going on in meditation is going on. But if the evaluation is constantly blah on you or something's wrong with you versus you're nailing it, you're sitting in meditation, the same content.
Exactly.
But the eye, I mean, what do we say, you know, seeing rather than seeing through or looking through the eyes of love, it's just a completely different life.
Yeah. And I think it, what makes it so, such good news or something along those lines for all of us is that the content isn't different. You know, it's not as if you had an insight and, okay, now you're a good meditator and before you were a bad meditator.
Yeah, exactly.
All it is, at least the way you're describing it, you're now receiving what's always been there. It's kind of like we were looking at a group a couple of times ago. It's been all around me.
Yeah. Yes.
I always am sitting on this cushion.
Yeah.
I always am nailing it. But I'm not always realizing
it.
So that's the difference. Mm-hmm. Is the difference between it's happening, this miraculous life is happening, this extraordinarily good human being is going through life, but stuck in a suffering conversation, or all that exact same stuff is happening, but he's actually receiving it and not having to suffer.
Yes, and then, and so having that actual experience, I feel so much more relaxed because I'm not engaged in a I'm not identified with whatever reacts to that. Mm. You know, all the trying to be good and get it right and, you know, it's like, I remember way before practice, I would have certain friends where it's like, I'm so glad, or, you know, mentors kind of, I'm so glad to be around them. Because I didn't know I was projecting, but I would feel like everything's okay. And I could just relax and be myself. And then there was all kinds of room to explore what was going on for me. But I really believed that once I left them,
you couldn't still have
it was all contained. And I think the folding it all in by nailing it, it's like, I'm always nailing. That's always going on. And so now there's that room. I mean, I project onto the meat eating and the cows, and that level of complexity of life and being able to just, I mean, we just never get to do that by pure distraction, look over here, or just the fear that arises, the identification with ego when you even start to look at anything, and the relief that it can kind of feel like when you just get small again. And just the space to, you know, like one of the things that always confounds me is how is it that I know there's this miraculous life when I have the attention here, yet it feels like there's quite a big willingness to continue to go along with the conversations. And one of the feedback I heard on a old recording a little bit ago was that there's still a hanging on a belief of what you're going to lose.
If you
let go of ego completely. So anyway, my point about that was it was just an example this morning of I got to explore that. And write out kind of like, what is it saying? So what are the lies? And I didn't even realize what they were until I wrote about
the lies around
you're going to lose something.
Yeah.
And it was particularly, the example was around, you're going to lose human relationships.
Mm-hmm. So you got to actually list out, I'm going to lose this, I'm going to lose that.
And then the mentor got to address them in what's true. And it was not even like, no, it's wrong and this is right. But just getting them out, and then our response to them from life. And of course, their response was pointing and looking and receiving. And in that way, I'm going to lose something or not lose something becomes irrelevant again. It's all in that place of, I just get to explore and be all of what this human being is, which seems to be, we get to look at things from awareness. And then it doesn't really matter where we end up. Or what we get or what we lose. It's just being in that. I mean, to me, I've always wanted this freedom. And to me, that's total freedom.
It really is. I mean, I think the meat eating is such a good example of it, because it's what you're laying out is a really good description, I think, of what keeps us from having that direct experience. Right? Because somehow, like, I don't want to really look at this because I want to eat bacon. You know? If the end result is that I'm not going to eat bacon, then even if that's an unconscious thing, I don't want to really look at this because I'm going to not. So what ends up happening there, total forgiveness in my experience, but it's like, okay, I get bacon. But I get a whole lot of suffering and fear and guilt and avoidance and I only barely get bacon.
Barely, maybe at all. Because the conversation, I see what you're saying, I think, is the attention's on the conversation. Like guilt and feeling bad and, well, but I should be able to have bacon. Well, you shouldn't have bacon or all of that. So even when you're eating the bacon, you don't get to actually eat it. And then the other thing you can't, so it never tells you all that, all the suffering, and it can never say what you receive.
Never,
which is always the big giant
and
blind space.
It. You know, it's the equivalent of, you're not allowed to love those cows. You cannot love those cows. You can't have that. In fact, you probably can't even love the bacon. You can't.
But again, I mean, just to get that out loud and look at that.
So huge.
I mean, that's...
Yeah, and you know, it can feel like what the word that just came in as risky, like risk-taking, which is so not actually what's happening, but it can feel like that. Mm-hmm. It can feel like, okay, it's a bit of a leap of faith here, right, to actually turn and start down that road of looking at, okay, great, what am I going to lose? You know, what, okay, this, but to really, really look at it. Because I think it's back to June's comment of, if it's suffering, if suffering has happened, it has to be a conditioned process. And I feel like when we really get that, that's what begins to cultivate that willingness to go, all right, then I'm going to look at what's going on here. This has to be a conditioned process. Let me start to really look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the thing that helps me with the, you know, identification of that fear is hearing everyone else.
Exactly.
I mean, doing that together.
Yeah.
Because then I project people sort of who've been there.
Yeah.
When, I guess maybe I've been there too, but maybe it highlights that place.
Yeah.
And you, like you said, oh, that's a conditioned process.
Yeah.
Oh, I've explored conditioned process. That person, and we get to hear what it's like for everybody.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't really seem that scary anymore. It seems less scary.
Yeah.
And of course, the willingness is always there.
Yeah.
So it's just now I'm free to kind of use that willingness.
Yeah. And it seems worth it. You know, I just thought of that. I think is it Ani Eastman? You know, at some point, risk to have the butt open is greater than the fear to not, so something along those lines.
Yeah,
but, you know, that place where, all right, like it's like the boy that I've been down that road a million times. I'm willing to try something else.
Mm-hmm.
Penny?
this prompted some thinking, a connection to what I was looking at coming down the hill. But one of the things I wanted to say was the first thing that attracted me to practice was coming to some groups and realizing that the facilitator was not afraid of anything. That was such an extraordinary experience.
Wow.
To be in a room where the person facilitating wasn't afraid of anything that came up. Because coming out of a religious background, you know, there's a lot of fear of being wrong. I mean, like big-time hellish fear of being wrong. And of course, in my particular tradition, it wasn't quite that bald, you know, but to be in a situation where you realize the person facilitating isn't afraid is an extraordinary experience. We've never experienced it.
Yeah.
And, you know, anybody even just conducting a meeting is usually scared to death.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I was looking at coming down the hill was the assignment about the worst thing anybody ever said to me and the best thing anybody ever said to me. And what I was realizing was that no one has ever said anything as bad as what conditioning says all the time. No external person ever has said what conditioning might say to me 60 times a day.
Wow.
And that was just very clarifying.
Yeah.
And also, then I was also looking at the flip side, which is when conditioning says nice things.
Mm.
And what I was seeing in it is that when it says nice things, it's no different than when it says awful things.
Mm.
Because all of it is pointing to there's a standard.
Yeah.
So even when it's saying, you know, even when it's saying you nailed it, you nailed it, and it is a thing.
And you have to keep nailing
you
it.
Finally,
if you don't nail it, then...
Right, and you finally got there.
Right.
Now, you're probably going to slip away next minute, but you finally got there this minute. So it just was really, it was clarifying to me, listening to what was just said, that, and thinking about, looking at what I was coming down the driveway thinking about, was, or looking at, was... That's the difference. You can say the nicest things, and it's, you know, it's the difference between a drug. You know, it's when conditioning says nice things, it's a hit.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's an addictive hit.
Yeah.
a bit of relief, mm-hmm. you know? And then, but it's always in terms of some standard that doesn't have to be stated.
Yeah.
And the implication, even in the best statements, is in the next moment you're not gonna get there.
Yeah.
And I think about the truly nice things, the wonderful things that are said to have been said to me, or that life says to me, mm-hmm. and there's nothing attached to them.
Exactly.
You know, they're just clean.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of spontaneity to them, and within them, I would use that word, there's freedom.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't attach to anything. It just sits there and feeds the heart.
Yeah.
And the heart knows it and responds.
So it's the nailed it of however the day went, you
That's
nailed
right.
it.
That's right.
Not because of this or because of that.
And really, you nailed it because you're part of life.
Because you are. I mean, I think what first came up, if I remember, and what we were talking about is, you know, this is the only penny life is ever going to have.
Right.
Right? This is the only.
Right.
In that sense, we're nailing it. Life has provided this.
Right.
And by being it, you know, fully, that's it.
Yeah. I was writing one of my evening postcards I wrote, and it was after our nailing it discussion. So I was one of the things I said that happened during the day, I said, you nailed it. And what I got was, and life and love nail it.
Yeah.
And so there's nothing actually for me to do.
Yeah.
There's nothing I have to be. There's nothing I have to live up to.
Yeah.
It's just in participating in that,
that's
nailing it.
Yeah.
And again, it's like the difference between this little I did it this time and I have to kind of gather myself around
the
it.
Fear
and
is aware,
yes.
right?
Yeah. And this kind of opening to that's just how it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you could do that's going to mess that up.
No. No, that's true. Yeah. And boy, that's the greatest freedom ever. And the other piece of it I was looking at was that, so I've often described that one of the karmic things is approval seeking.
Mm.
And what I'm more and more getting is that is simply a process that ego does.
Yeah.
And it is attached to that, or is it? It's just another manifestation of that, of the way in which conditioning approves.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, it's just externalizing the approval.
Exactly.
The approval in that case. It's the same thing as the way conditioning says it, which is, this is the standard.
Yep.
You met it in someone's eyes.
Yep.
And again, it's always conditional.
Always
and it's an addictive hit, so it fades very quickly.
Yeah.
And then you start craving another.
Yeah. Mm. Gosh, and that is not freedom.
No.
Yeah.
I've been looking at kind of fears of being yelled at,
mm-hmm.
sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That one of my tendencies or in life is I tend to not be I was kind of more of a dreamy kid and not paying attention to different like where things are or
mm-hmm.
which shelf goes on this or
gotcha.
All those sorts of things
mm-hmm.
and then because of my background growing up in a house where there's a lot of serious abuse,
mm-hmm.
then I became even more likely to disassociate or
sure. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of a survival that was employed. Mm-hmm.
So then I'm not really here then.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm not really here and I make a mistake, then I get yelled at and then that reinforces this fear because
mm-hmm.
I've had the experience of that.
Yeah.
That happening. And then by carrying that fear in my consciousness, it will often, my experience is that if I'm in a good space, then, you know, fine. But if I'm carrying that fear or timidity with me, then that will draw out responses from other people that will be impatient or that, and then that kind of reinforces it too. And so what I'm really getting to see, of course, in the Zen environment, which has reams of procedures and guidelines.
Which are super nice. Wash your shoes. Wash your hands. Go ahead. Now, okay, so if you're going to go from here to here, you need your outdoor shoes, but then you've got your indoor shoes here, and then what you do is you, okay, so then you... And this like, towel goes for this, and then this towel goes for this, and then this towel goes for that towel. I
remember.
I know it's blue, but it's not concerned, and that doesn't We've all been there.
So my mind is going, oh, which towel do I use? And then that kind of, so then I go back to my little hermitage and kind of reread the rules and kind of go, well, I'm gonna review this and I'm gonna try harder.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I try harder, it makes it worse.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I go back and then worse, and then I go, okay, what really works is being at center and just relax, and if you get corrected, you get corrected, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I got this big stack of notes, which are very polite, by the way, because the experience that I'm having is, I think, which is a healing, is to be corrected but not yelled at.
Yeah, that was fascinating to me all the way back to the beginning when you were describing it. So, of course, then you, quote, make a mistake. That's the first one we have to, right? And then I get yelled at. And I was curious to have you define yelled at.
That's it's kind of deconstructed.
Yeah.
I'm often, or I'm attempting to, say, well, what are you projecting? What are they really thinking? What are you believing about the situation? So I'm trying to put it in perspective, and then it sneaks in.
Sure.
The voices will say, you're not the right person because...
And they're at the yelled at. So you're being yelled at inside your own head, which is reinforcing the entire program that you're describing as a project. So,
absolutely.
I'm curious, Jeff, if, I mean, all of that, you know, wow, okay, so what's being projected here? What are you believing? That seems really, really helpful in the sense of, again, kind of like June was describing, all right, there's definitely suffering here, so there must be a lot being believed. There must be a lot being projected.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems really important to employ those foundational practice tools in that situation. I'm curious if there's a sense of the guy, okay, so here's this guy who has this, all of this stuff that got put in place when he was really, really little, way before he had the ability to say, gosh, I wonder, no, I'm not sure I believe that, and, right? I mean, none of that. So it was all just concretized in there, set, done deal. So now he's a grown-up, right? But like everyone, those things in similar, what feel like similar circumstances get triggered. It's like a hologram. They just come to life, right? And I would project he gets very little, right? Back to however old he was when all of that was going on. And I'm curious if there feels like there's a presence who's with him, which might be different than, okay, now what's being projected here? What are we believing? But does it feel like there's a sense of someone who's just holding his hand and just being with him?
Well, it's a learning process in the sense that, yes, it's, I did a two-hand recording in the bench training, and this morning I was crying in because I was trying to listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
that kid.
Yeah.
And I just felt difficult because of the in this particular environment, it does call on one to rely on one's own mentor instead of going to my wife, who understands and would serve that role. You know, here I feel like, well, I'm it. Now, I know everybody's very supportive, and if I started to have anxiety attacks, I could, you guys would help, and I could write a note or something. You'd step in.
But I think your point is a good one. No one's going to come over and hug you.
No.
And if you're sitting on the porch crying, no one's even going to come over and say, hey, Jeff, can I help you? Because we're left to have the experience that can be very, very difficult. But I think that's what brings each of us here, is we know it's possible. Mm-hmm. And sort of back to some of the conversations we've had this morning, we know I project. It's what I truly want, because it's the unconditional thing that will be there for me no matter what. And I know it already is there, but I need to practice finding it. And so, I mean, that's the miracle of the privileged environment, and in particular the monastic environment, which is, we all know how hard it is. Everyone here knows how hard it is. From the texture of the towels, to the changing my shoes, to the washing my hands, to the incredible stuff that comes up for all of us on a daily basis, and sitting with that. So there's a way in which not interacting with one another, not coming to full rescue each other from it, is a tremendous act of love.
Yeah, it is. It is. Because I know that that's the freedom, it is when you can feel it inside yourself, and it's, you know that it's it's not as, you're not as scared or afraid anymore. As I mean, you can slip off, it'll come back, but you've experienced it.
Yeah.
You can trust yourself, you can rely on yourself instead of...
And slipping off isn't wrong. It doesn't mean anything's happened. It doesn't mean I've done something wrong. It just happens. We slip off, and then we practice coming back.
Yeah.
And so you said you have been doing some two candid recordings, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's some challenge in it, but also feeling like, so when you're listening back to the guy who's made the recording, who maybe is struggling with all of that, are you finding compassion for him?
Yes.
Yeah.
I am. I think it's the it's keeping the voices away from niggling back in. Which is, you know, it lasts for a while, but then it starts.
Sure, absolutely.
You've got 3 whole more weeks here.
Yep.
This isn't.
Yep. And I
don't know if you heard it, but there was some party off in the distance.
Oh.
You guys hear it?
Yeah. There's I think across the canyon, there's a kind of school that I think must have been starting up their year last night.
Okay. Yeah. Condition was telling me I should go find the park. No, we're going to stay here in my hermitage.
Just to help you out with that, it's not close. It must be good fly.
Oh, that's funny.
But you know, the big piece to me in that, Jeff, is to really remember that we're training and we're practicing, and that voice is going to worm its way back in. It just is, and we don't even have to particularly get into a contest with it. Because if we get into a contest with it of where, you know, I know for me, sometimes when it's really, really hard and I do a two-handed recording and I really hear that person, there's something so touching and moving and kind of has a breakthrough quality to it. And it can feel like a huge relief, right? Because I can really see the person who's going through all of that. Mm-hmm. And then it can feel sort of like Penny was pointing out, okay, the way it can set me back up is, okay, let's stay here. Let's be able to have this, all with this open-hearted, this compassionate. Well, it just doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. You know, that guy who feels afraid and gets triggered by them, there's a lot in this environment that's going to trigger him. It is. It absolutely is. And so that's going to be the daily opportunity, is to reconnect, to reconnect, to reconnect, to keep practicing it. And not to think that because it's getting triggered again today, that I somehow didn't practice well enough yesterday, or I didn't haha, or I didn't, to know that it is just going to keep getting triggered. That's part of what happens for us. And that our opportunity in that is to keep practicing with it, to keep training, to coming back to that compassion, coming back to the unconditional love. And sometimes what we realize is then the gift of forgetting to change my shoes or not using the towel for the haha, maybe that's my opportunity to reconnect again, to reconnect again, to realize I'm nailing it no matter what. It's not based on whether I'm remembering the details, whether I'm here to do it just right. It's not based on that.
Oh, good point.
Yeah. And just, you know, one last thing about it, which is that, you know, if I'm going through a hard time, you know, reconnect with the heart, and then I start to, quote, you know, get it all right, there's a way in which that would be sort of disappointing. Because then I would start to get set up to feel like, okay, I practiced well, now I'm getting it all right, now I'm the right person. But that's not what we're practicing for. We don't want to practice to be the right person. We're practicing for that unconditional place where this person is loved and lovable no matter what. Thank you. Thank you.